A kilogram, symbol small kg, is an agreed quantity of mass that everyone on the planet who is signed up to it agrees that this quantity of mass is the same. So a kilogram in New York should be the same as a kilogram in Sydney, should be the same as a kilogram in Rome, for instance. Now, an agreed amount of charge, this is number of electrons, is a coulomb, capital letter C, and the agreed amount of current is 1 ampere, capital letter A, and this is 1 coulomb passing a point per second. So if I have a truck full of electrons and it's got a coulomb of electrons and it passes me every second, I can describe that situation as a current of 1 amp. Now, amp derives from a French scientist, an interesting French scientist if you get to read some of the back documents. He is in Paris, and he noted this effect that if he applied a current to two iron bars in the same direction, the iron bars would come together, and that's Ampere's effect of two currents. And there's a simple formula of K, which is 2, bear in mind, can I say it again, 2, not 2.0, 2 by 10 to the minus 7, I in the top bar, I in the bottom bar, the lengths of the bar is divided by the distance between them. So if you have them, a very long set of bars or a very high current, you will get a net force between the two bars, and this will carry the two bars together. And obviously, if you reduce the distance, so R is much less than 1, say a couple of microns, you'll get a substantial force acting there. And so this is one way that you can measure current by getting it to generate force. Now, the explanation of this can be done without, you can do it with magnetic fields. It can also be done by special relativity, and that's what we'll do a little bit further on. So I'm going to talk about how we've come from this gentle French experiment where Davy and Faraday were invited across to observe it firsthand, and how that led off to the invention of the electric motor. This is where this effect is used and tweaked up, and our time is full of electromotors. But it's now got some really interesting alleged use, I should say, because I've only read it in a few articles. I'm yet to see it myself. This effect turned on its head is used to fire aircraft off the next generation of US aircraft carriers. And it's whereas we go through a lot of iterations to explain our artful use of it in everyday situations, this is a very much raw situation which you'd like to use and describe. So this is a fertile ground for teaching. It's also a dangerous ground for teaching because it discusses warfare and military power, a whole lot of things that may get people interested, but also put other people offside, depending on where you come from. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific and discuss teaching techniques from a teaching overall technique. So the Ampere effect, I've given you the equation, KI1, I2, L on R, the distance, or L on D, equals the force, the net force between two objects. So if you have two bars, the two bars will come together. Now, we see this phenomenon very much in lightning. This is called a zeta pinch. It's described by another method of the actual magnetic field acting to funnel currents and down together in a lightning bolt. You'll see it in your plasma ball. Your plasma ball will be gathered up into a magnetic field. The current will increase if it's got the correct colouring in the gas. So this is a a large ball with a reasonably low pressure gas and a Tesla coil on the inside of it, a air resonant high frequency transformer which produces millions of volts and at very low current, and this is sufficient to give you a plasma discharge, and so you can see this as little tongues of plasma. So this is the process cooling together. Now, if we do the opposite thing, have currents running in opposite directions, the wires or plasmas will move apart. So basically you can steer lightning with lightning. So if you have a lightning bolt's coming towards you, you can fire a lightning bolt back and that will create a magnetic field which will steer your thing away. So there have been situations in where we've had cables and sufficiently high currents. So this is in the early days of making tokamak reactors, the current carrying wires into these fusion reactors would have such a huge current that they would actually pull and put quite a substantial brief force in between. In the laboratory, you can actually, a demonstration, which you want to do, is actually demonstrate this effect. And after a few years of working on it, how do you actually make a good effect? So you need at least a 1-amp DC power supply. AC will work just as well because it's not going to respond on such a time that you will see any effect on it. And you got an amp. Ideally, if you've gained, you can get a welding set which produces a number of amps at low current. So you don't want high voltage because the thing that you'll produce will be at low voltage. And then you have to connect it up to a strip of aluminium, light aluminium foil. Now, the aluminium you have from a packet foil is an aluminium composite. And so it has aluminium on one side and it's got mylar plastic, very thin plastic, on the other side. The shiny side is shiny because it's not oxidizing. It's not oxidizing because it's covered with a very thin film of plastic. This is why aluminium foil that you get out is shiny, but that shininess will go away. You put a match on it, that shininess will, or actually get some carbon on it, but if you heat it up, that the plastic will move away. Your surface will be oxidized and it'll be the aluminium will no longer be a usable foil. It will just crumble in your hand. So you need that plastic and a piece of aluminium foil. So you have the process of how you're going to cut a very thin strip of aluminium foil. And the method that obviously if you have ceramic scissors left over from cutting up mylar, that's a great thing. Thing is that the aluminium is soft and will actually bond with your sort of pressure weld to your cutting surface and actually stick to it. You can actually friction weld things. So there's many cases where you want to attach two metal parts together. You can actually spin them up at really high speed and touch them together. Once spun at very high speed, the high speed will cause it to melt a little bit and it will actually friction weld to it. So there's such things as friction welding. The technique I have is getting a paper and a long length of paper strip folding a metamaterial of paper, rolling the paper aluminium up in a coil. So if you look at cross section of it, you'll see a circle with paper, aluminium, paper, aluminium, paper, aluminium, and you can then more comfortably cut this and produce a thin strip of aluminium, which is necessary. And so you arrange this and hang this aluminium down and apply a current through it. And to everyone's amazement, this thin strip of aluminium, I recommend about 40 centimetres down, 40 centimetres up, produces a fairly natty effect. You want a small separation, a small radius at the inside. So pinching the actual aluminium together will actually keep it a good separation. Keeping a piece of paper between the two will stop the two touching. But if you apply a current, this will suddenly burst apart. So the force of the current going one way will be against the current going the other way. A very good predict, observe, explain scenario. Look, there's many other things. One thing I definitely do suggest is getting a relatively strong super magnet. Careful that super magnets have to be handled with care, one at a time rather than two. Two is a recipe for the two slamming together and slamming a student's finger. But you get them to hold it, and the main thing is to get them to hold it next to a transformer or just up to a something drawing a reasonable current, say like a radiator or something like that, which is drawing a reasonable current, and you can actually get them to hold it, and they will feel the 50 hertz, or I think in the United States it's 60 hertz oscillation. They'll feel it in their hand, so they can actually feel it and start to observe this process. There's a demonstration to show them, which is a pulse into a coil on a rod and an aluminium disc, and the aluminium disc sees a changing flux, generates a compensating flux of tries to reduce the magnetic field going through it. That's called Lenz's law. So the EMF or current induced will be such that it will tend to reduce the flux of magnetic field. But the flux of magnetic field is the strength of magnetic field times the area. I think it's got a unit of Weber, and the strength of magnetic field is H for Henry. Just off the top of my head, a capital H. Weber is capital B, it's capital W, B, small b, because it has to be separate from a watt. A watt is a capital W, a Weber is capital WB. It's not Henry, it's Tesla, capital T. I'll have to remember. I think it's capital T. Obviously, there's a concern. T is not a unit, it's a description of temperature. So you can see all these letter usages, you have to really watch it. Magnetic field strength is in Tesla T. Okay, so I'm just briefly describing one first experiment is the foil and the magnetic field blowing it apart. The next experiment is a ring being fired off a pulsed electromagnetic. If you do have a solenoid, can I recommend, this is just a wire around solenoid, if I can recommend hooking it up to 50 hertz AC and putting it over a retort stand. You leave it there for a while, lift it off the retort stand, and you'll feel the retort stand is quite warm to touch due to the eddy currents. Again, Lenz's law, if it has a current, a changing magnetic field in it, will try to resist the magnetic field by creating a current which works against it. Producing a current which works against it in the aluminium coil, your aluminium tube, will produce an opposing magnetic field. So if there's a north field growing, it will try and grow a south field, south pole downwards, and so north versus it will try and grow a north field downwards or limit the growth of a north. So north versus north will be repulsive, and so your ring will fire away. We now come to what I promised is the US carrier fleet. So you can show pictures of on YouTube of US Army rail guns. And so this is with two rails, and on top of the rail is a conductor, which can fly along, and you apply a potential difference from one rail to the other, which goes via the conductor. This will cause a loop magnetic field and cause the rail to move forward. Now, the explanations Lenz's law, etc., are pretty woolly. It's actually much stronger to go via special relativity. And again, if you want to get a handle on this, I think if you just type into Google, I'm sorry about this, special relativity explanation of magnetic fields, you'll see a very strong, easy to understand thing. This is something not taught at school, so I don't know how it goes. This is more a peer-to-peer, teacher-to-teacher explanations. So you can do that. There's sort of a bit of an interest or an deferred interest. I suppose one of the things you can do, and this is just, to go and give it a background information, is look at the US aircraft carriers story. Now, obviously, there's an interest to Australia because the presence of US air carriers saved us during World War II, and sort of the need for naval protection sort of has shaped our... I've got these absolutely amazing birds opposite this fantastic parrot, and it's sort of a kingfisher. It's a miniature version of a kookaburra here. It's sort of the US projection of power through these massive aircraft carriers. So after World War II, at the sort of start of the Cold War, the US began building these huge, I think they're called Nimitz class or Enterprise. Oh, there's Forrestal, Nimitz, and the next class coming after the Nimitz class is the Gerald R. Ford, President Ford class. It's President Ford class we'll just discuss. So the Enterprise, I don't think, was destined to be a nuclear aircraft carrier, but what they did is they... if you're United States people, hello people in the United States, they put eight nuclear reactors to power these enormous engines inside this unbelievably big aircraft carrier. So the aircraft carrier is as long as the main body of the Empire State Building. So this is a massive aircraft carrier, and it was involved in Cuba and Vietnam, and sort of a symbol of American power. So Bush addressed his troops on it in the Iraq War. He said in the Iraq War, job done. This is before September 11 or anything like that. And so this is a big, huge aircraft carrier. It's got a whole lot of nuclear reactors. Then the Nimitz class, which I think they've produced the last of the Nimitz class from 75 onwards. Nimitz was the admiral in command of carrier warfare. So, look, to give you an idea, most countries would at most, if you're a power, you might have one. I think the Chinese have got one, French two, English to Russia's got one aircraft carrier, and it's not seaworthy. It's actually got to move around with a tugboat, apparently. So I've read all these different reports. And the US have got just uncountable number, I think. Look, it's 10 of the Nimitz, 10 nuclear power carriers, and the nuclear power carriers have got a lifetime of 50 years and 20 years. They can stay at sea for 20 years without refueling. They've got enough nuclear power then. The Nimitz class, the next class up, I don't know whether. Obviously, there's the famous aircraft carrier, the Ronald Reagan, and all these things steam into areas. And look, the battleship diplomacy. I think the America before World War One steamed into Sydney Harbour with its famous white fleet of battleships. So to say we've got a battleship, the Americans used to paint their ships completely white. Sort of, haha, we've got a lot of power here. And of course, this made such a big impression on Australia, we started our Royal Navy. Thank you very much, America. And I've got that from visiting the Royal Maritime Museum, which had an exhibit on US firepower. Now, I know you want to get back to rail guns, electromagnetic stuff. Of course, a rail gun is a gun. It's very rare that you want to use it. And obviously, you need a much greater current source than ampere, and you will ever get to make something which is going to do anything more than launch a mosquito up a couple of centimetres at the maximum. You need a lot more than that. But you need to understand. So the Enterprise is some sort of monster aircraft carrier. It's hard to believe with eight nuclear reactors. There's obviously a lot of redundancy there. It sounds something which is being converted across at a certain size of nuclear reactor. And some Americans said we're going to need eight of them. The Nimitz and the next class have two nuclear reactors, and you can well imagine that one nuclear reactor is down, the other one has to be up. So you can imagine that because a nuclear reactor can't possibly guarantee full power, two can be run in tandem. I hate to say it. There's, of course, the Russian nuclear submarine, which had some sort of meltdown, and it's a very famous nuclear submarines, and the Russians courageously had to run in to repatch some coolant, and every time they ran in, they'd suffer radiation sickness, and the next person would drop dead, and the next person would run in to put on the masks. You believe the US have got things a lot more under control with the Nimitz. Now, the Nimitz is all a cabbage. If you read through the Nimitz class, there are 10 of them. So, the rest of the world have got complete, I don't know, sort of junky diesel ones. And I think there's one Chinese one in the South China Sea. Again, with these very brightly white painted planes, which I don't know how they would compete against any sort of stealth fighter. And there's the propaganda views of we see on Australian TV of the planes waiting to go, and there's this little person with a white helmet on, you know, aircraft, all the things, and saying white gloves and go, and his hands going, and the fighter pilot's got everyone going, just waiting for the man on the deck with his white glove to tell me to go, otherwise I can't leave. Tactically, I don't know what the strength of the Chinese fleet is compared to the size of the American fleet at the moment. The South China Sea is mind-bogglingly to look at, to see the territorial claim there. Quite a scary situation. I'm not here negotiating it. It's quite a generous interpretation, as far as I could see, compared to Vietnam and the Philippines, who are either side of the South China Sea. So if you imagine someone drawing a liquid drop down, all the waters in the South China Sea have been territorially claimed for China. I suppose the fundamental question you have to say is, what is the purpose of doing that? Let's move on. So the US have got these 10 Nimitz-class submarines. Sorry, not submarines. Aircraft carriers, these angled aircraft carriers. Just a note, I can't confirm it, that they're got one slight flaw in terms of the balancing of it, that they actually sail at a slight tilt or list. Again, it's hard to know whether that's true, but what is claimed for the next generation is that the nuclear reactors can create sufficient current, sufficient energy, and with the advent, I would expect, of supercapacitors, which can store absolute masses of that's right, so they can store absolute masses of charge. So a coulomb per volt is a farad, so these multiple farad, and you can actually buy these multi these are capacitors which in my childhood would be absolute fantasy capacitors, but they're now out there, and you can actually go into your electronics store and say buy a 1 or 5 farad capacitor. So I would imagine the aircraft carriers have a huge bank of these capacitors to supply the energy, because you just would want to suddenly, you know, rev up your nuclear reactor, so you'd build up these farads, and then they have these rails which launch, use the rail gun to launch their aircraft. So the if you look at the Chinese and other aircraft carriers, we have a big ramp to lift it up, to push them up. The US have flat aircraft carriers and a propulsion system. So the original propulsion system is the use of steam, and now it's steam to fire off I don't know, everything. Look, steam's been used for everything. So the Germans use steam to fire their V2s to get them up to speed on ramps, on rails, and they'd use peroxide, and the catalyst on the peroxide would cause this to decay very quickly and produce steam. And the steam, so it's amazing, steam powered would fire the V2s. Then the Minuteman missiles, there's a whole lot of silos which are steam powered missile powers that are to actually fire the rocket up, and a lot of the missiles which fire up and then ignite is to get them up into the air, about to fall down, and then their rocket motors ignite. And if you want to get your technology really good, that you were pretty confident that you'd fire this huge tons and tons of material up into the sky, and you want to be absolutely sure that it goes. So the standard launch of aircraft requires these steam catapults to push them out, and also these cables with hooks on them to actually grab them as they're flying down. Otherwise, to actually catch them at a sufficient speed and move them off. So, like, if you have a fantastic aircraft carrier but you can only launch one aircraft an hour, that's 24 aircraft you've got up there, and your threats are changing. So the aim, I think, would be with these electric catapults is to fire jets off in rapid succession without creating a whole lot of steam and rubbish, so it'd be nice and clean to go off. This is the electric rail gun, then there's the other alleged thing, and of course with an electric rail gun you can get your servo computer to control the force of this, so your aircraft are launched with a beautiful, lovely chuck. So if you're flying your dart and you just throw your dart with a huge effort, it won't go anywhere, it'll just fly up in the air and break. So it's that uniform force over a long length of time, that programmable force, that's very good. You can also imagine having a hook on the base of your aircraft, and you land and you hook over a big rubber band to go down. That hook, if your aircraft wasn't built too well, would just snap off the back of your aircraft. So your force, your hook, you're building a long-range reconnaissance aircraft. The length of range will be lost as you're building the aircraft stronger and stronger to land on an aircraft carrier. So the other alleged thing is the use of electromagnets, which they suddenly the vehicle learns lands, and suddenly there is powerful electromagnets which are activated underneath the deck, which pull the light aircraft back. So you would imagine for heavy aircraft this is not necessary, but for the lighter aircraft going forward. So although a lot of these things are in theory, they're now in practice. The use and introduction of this as a teaching point would really vary on how you're going to approach it in each jurisdiction with each group of students. And I'll do another podcast in future about the special relativity representation of magnetic fields. And really, when you get into special relativity of magnetic fields, you get into also the quantum mechanical aspects of magnetic fields. But the magnetic field in one frame, magnetic field in one framework and electric field in one framework convert over to another framework where the magnetic field, one frame's magnetic field is another frame's electric field. They're actually interchangeable. So this is obviously a current is a moving electric charge, and that's a frame. There's moving frames buried in this, and this is actually a much more elegant and powerful way of handling. I don't know whether we can eventually ever teach this at school, but it's definitely the premium way of doing it. So just to recap, so my interest in this, I was looking up at Kevlar, and Kevlar is used in armor and components and obviously in these aircraft carriers. So I began to look at them, and lo and behold, there's a science lesson that the United States will probably teach some other poor power, but or the person opposing these carriers will have to definitely understand and think through. Moving through, you've got the rail gun, which is electromagnetic force. It's something to really, really think about. And electromagnets themselves. And in the process of explaining and developing that story, you have a series of practical experiments. The aluminium foil being suspended and a current being put through it and pulling apart, just having a super magnet in someone's hand, even a small button magnet is actually strong enough for someone to feel, and the heating of a coil through inductive, I suppose it's called inductive heating, but you can do it at 50 hertz. It's sufficient. It's not going to get red or hot or anything like that, but it's enough to show what's going on. So I hope this has been worthwhile. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on thinking and keep on doing science. Signing off, Peter Hill.